Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Herschel is on Twitter, at Herschel180. And he sends a tweet and says, Paul seems a little down about it being Valentine's Day. Please remind him that no one loves him on any other day either.
Well, listen, I should say that this anti-Valentine's Day thing extends beyond the show. We don't really do it in my house. I mean, my kid goes to school with the Valentines in the box to collect the Valentine.
Yeah.
He got a bear this morning. Going back to school, by the way, today is a complete catastrophe this morning. Simon and Dad not getting
Sick
along.
Sick Simon now. Well, but, Simon.
Yeah, Teresa and I are not big on Hallmark holidays. It's not a thing.
Coach Mack.
Good for you and Teresa, by the way. I feel the exact same way.
You feel the exact same way after you got Angie a box of chocolates
I'm going to go get Angie flowers. She likes flowers. And she even requests, though, she says, please, buy me nothing else but... She likes fresh flowers in the house.
Yeah.
So probably once every 2 or 3 weeks, I'll just pick up flowers from when I go to the store. So she said, just get the normal flowers.
See, if I took flowers or sent flowers to Teresa at her office, she would be horrified.
Well, see, and I'm talking like $15,
like in a professional environment, she just doesn't want that.
She doesn't want flowers from Paul.
We're talking like $20 Publix flowers. This is not like a bouquet with a singing person coming by the office to deliver them.
You're not going to Joy's over here on West End, which, by the way, has shut down.
Coach Mack is presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. He joins us in studio every Thursday morning. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll have Coach Mack's contacts. Dave McGinnis, how are you?
Yeah, I was going to call somebody on Valentine's, but we're not now. I mean, we can't do that.
Random guest that you, one of your sweethearts?
Yes, I brought 4 Valentines in here for you 3 and Morgan. I'm gonna keep them in my briefcase now.
I mean, wait. I accept cards. I just won't talk about them on the air unless they're loaded with cash.
I had a lot of money in all of them, but I guess I'll keep them in there.
Joe Flacco was getting paid by the Baltimore Ravens. Now he's getting paid cash by the Denver Broncos.
What do you think?
I'm still pondering why Denver made this move. Why do they want Joe Flacco?
Well, John Elway, guys. I mean, he's thrown darts at this board to get a quarterback forever. I mean, he hit on Peyton Manning, but you start looking at the list of guys that he's either drafted or has assimilated and the money that he's spent. Now, look, John Elway's getting a lot of leeway there in Denver because he's John Elway, correct? All right. And so, you know, he's still going to draft somebody. But Case Keenum, you know, is a really good backup quarterback in this league that can get you and win you a few games, but he's, you know, you can't put 16 games on him. You just can't, and it's not his fault. I've had him on a team. He's a great locker room person. He's a grinder. He's a worker. I love Case Keenum, but if, you know, you're going to pay somebody $18 million to $21 million a year, you expect them to make a difference. I know, and plus, you know, we brought him in, and as I say, I'm not sure that there are very many other general managers in the league that could get by with this many passes at a quarterback at big dollars, but, you know, the ownership situation's a little different out there in Denver. John Elway is John Elway in Denver, and so he wanted a veteran quarterback, and he went and got one, and it worked out good for both of them because he wanted one. You know, there's cap savings on both sides of it. You know, there's still, I mean, and Flacco's going to make money.
Yes, he is. Yeah. And reports are they're not going to restructure his contract. Benjamin Albright, who covers the Broncos, very good, at Albright NFL, he tweeted out a screenshot from a text that he received from a scout last night. And it intrigued me because it said that Flacco forces you to defend every blade of grass defensively while Keenum does not. Is that true anymore with Flacco? Watching the Baltimore Ravens recently when he was playing, it wasn't like they were throwing all over the field like they used to.
No, and you don't know how much of that is the offense or how much of that is Flacco's arm not being Flacco's arm anymore. I can remember still the Senior Bowl when he was down there. I mean, he you know, coming out, and this guy had a tremendous arm, and I think he probably still does. And I don't know whether there's restrictions on what the offense was. I know he's got a stronger arm than Case Keenum. I can tell you that. You know, he does that. Now, how much does that make a difference? Clearly, that's what John Elway wanted. And normally right now in Denver, John Elway gets what John Elway wants.
Brock Osweiler also had a great arm.
There
right?
you go.
But yeah, you got to be able to make the throws. You got to be able to handle the – I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it than having a great arm, right? If having a great arm was it, Osweiler would be the starting quarterback in Denver still.
Sure. Yeah, and clearly to that point, you know, Paul, what he's going with is a veteran quarterback.
Zach Mettenberger had a great arm, by the way.
I mean, but at least Flacco has done it, you know, in the league. But, I mean, you know, that to your point, a big arm is not all of it. Clearly, it's not. But he's won ball games. I mean, what's his overall record? You guys probably got it somewhere on the
close to 500 since the Super Bowl.
I think he's right on 500.
Yeah, but he's been in a lot of games, and those other two guys you mentioned have been in hardly none. You know, and so, but as I say, it goes back to the point as to where you've got a general manager out there that is getting great leeway to do what he wants with the whole franchise. I mean, you know, and what he's done with the quarterback situation is clearly, as I said, he's been throwing darts at that board since Peyton Manning for a while.
Paul, set up the safety discussion you and I and Chad had yesterday about the Titans and the market that is set by Eric Reed in the new contract in Carolina.
Well, I mean, I think Eric Reed's deal throws things off when you're negotiating not with a guy like Byard, but with a guy like Vaccaro, who was better than Reed last year, but probably isn't worth the money that Reed got, $7 million a year now. And if you're going to pay Byard something like $13 million a year, which is what the going rate is for the top safety in the NFL, how much can you afford to pay the complimentary second guy? You know, can you invest $20 million a year in your safeties?
Well, I think it depends on what your cap is everywhere else. But as you say, and once anytime deals get done, I mean, you're very savvy with this. I mean, all you guys are, and our listeners are too. The way the league is set up, once you start setting parameters with you know, that's why people were, you know, that's why there was a lot of defensive linemen in the league, tackles in the league specifically, that were waiting until Aaron Donald did his deal. Because whether they're as good as Aaron Donald or not, the bar is set way up here, and then if you can get somewhere in the middle of that or even below that, it's probably greater than the market value at the point, you know, where you are as a player. So to your point, the market has been set, and now it's the individual negotiations. And so the cap is going up every year. The thing that the Titans are going to deal with is they're going to have a quarterback, you know, that they're going to pay, you know, whose money's gone up, who has not been making, you know, that top tier money for a while. And that happens with all franchises. You know, when you've got your quarterback on a rookie deal, you can add a lot of things going around. That's what the Rams are doing right now. They're getting ready to have to pay some people too.
Was Vaccaro better than you expected last year? Overall?
Yes, he was. He was, because I mean, I thought a lot of Kenny Vaccaro coming out, you know, vetting him in college. I thought a lot of him. We did as a staff. I mean, you know, I mean, he was the best safety in that draft.
Yeah, you said you almost drafted him.
Yeah, right? He was the best safety in that draft. I mean, we really liked him a lot because of what he did, and especially because of the physical presence that he brought and the things that we were doing with the safety den. Then we were, you know, we were sliding the line strong and bringing a safety down weak in the box, you know, in a run front, and also the fact that he could cover some ground. He's got speed to lap, you know, to lap. And so we really liked him a lot. The coach that coached him, Dwayne Aquina in college, was Chuck Cecil's coach. I mean, we had some real insight, you know, on this guy as to what he was. And when he came in off of the injury, I didn't know what he was going to be like off of the injury, you know, after having been out of the league. And I thought he did a tremendous job two ways. He did a great job physically. And then mentally, the way he picked up and the way he assimilated into that defense, I mean, he became a factor. So, yes.
Here's one thing that could happen, Hutt, I think, and that we should keep in consideration, right? Reed's an outlier. Sets the bar. Vaccaro's agent wants that money. Nobody steps up and pays him that money, but it extends, again, how long he waits. And so he may be available deep into free agency well after the draft and all of that stuff, but it screws up the timetable. And so maybe he's available in July, you know, as training camps come, and he ends up taking a lot less, but it's not with, you know, and maybe the Titans get him then, or maybe somebody else does,
yeah.
But he's not with you during OTAs. He's not with you during all this time, the Titans or whoever. And he ends up, you get him for reasonable money, but you don't get him now. You get him way later.
And based on the way the contracts are set, you still have Cyprian on your roster.
Yeah.
Right. During all of that.
And maybe you trade them for each other later, but not now, later.
See, all of the, that's a very fair point. I mean, it really is. And plus, you remember, you're dealing with a player that was sitting out for a long time before he came, you know, before he came here last year. And the fact that, you know, just watching the way that he interacted and what he did, and I think there's a mutual interest on both parts because he did a nice job. And I think he liked being here, too. And he liked playing in Dean Pease's defense.
Hey, you were at the Alliance of American Football kickoff weekend. Was it Birmingham?
Yes, I was.
How was it?
Yes, I was.
Shutout.
Yes, I was. And it was, I had contacted the people that I know down there, which is quite a few of them, and they invited me down, gave me full access, free access everywhere. Look, it's run. It is run. Joe Pendry is the general manager. You know, I coach with Joe at the Bears. Joe Pendry is Nick Saban's right-hand guy at Alabama. And so he's got all kind of, you know, contacts down there. And, I mean, he's an NFL guy. He's been a coach forever. He and Nick Saban go clear back to West Virginia. Anyway, Joe's the general manager down there. There's a girl named Julie Nelson that's a communications director down there that was with us at the Rams, and then she was in Cleveland, and then she was the director for the NFL Alumni Association for 2 years. I mean, so they've got solid people in place. Tim Lewis is the head coach. You know, they've got, and I wanted to go down there and just see if it was run like how it was run, not necessarily the game guys, but see how everything else was around it. You guys have been around big time ball long enough to know you can go in and see real quick pregame, locker rooms, you know, workouts, I mean, you know, warm-ups, and just press box, everything, see how it's run, set. It's run just like an NFL Sunday ball game, except on a smaller scale. I was very, very impressed. I really was. And then, the way the game was, the timing of the game, the first half was over in an hour and 10 minutes.
That's the single best thing, I think, the pace.
Hey, and Paul, I'm with you, and I watched the first, you know, Jeff Fisher was going to go with me. He was down in Orlando, and he was going to fly back. His flight got delayed, so he said, you know, and I said, well, I'm going to go ahead and go. Anyway, really glad I did. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot, and I was all over that stadium, you know, from the box to the donor's box to everywhere. I was everywhere, you know, on the field. They run that thing so well, and the pace of it is good. And I'm telling you, and I'm a football purist. I mean, I've done this in this league for 30-plus years. I've been in it for over 40 years. The kickoffs, when they put them on the 25-yard line.
That's a big part of the pace.
You never missed it. You never missed it. I mean, you really didn't. Score, put the ball down and go.
It's like schoolyard.
It's 35-second, you know, clock. I mean, and it moves.
And I don't think they were using all of it either.
Well, they weren't. At the first of the ball game, you could see, and you could also see on the previous Saturday telecast, that they were hurrying a little bit because, you know, it's something to get used to. Now, they'd had a month in San Antonio together. You know, all the teams were down there together. They worked together, and they worked the clock. And then the innovations of it, I mean, the transparency of the reviews.
Fantastic.
I think so, too. I mean, it was just, it's a good fan experience.
What did you think about the level of athleticism you saw on the field?
No, and good question, Chad, because that's something that's going to matter. First of all, the regional player acquisitions was brilliant because I was in Birmingham, Alabama, and every time Trent Richardson touched the football, I mean they loved it. It's got player recognition, and the guys look. The guys are the guys that are right on the verge of that cut. Remember when they used to have two cuts? Some of those guys are in that first cut, and some of the guys are on the verge of the second cut, and some of the guys that are playing, and you could see, were those guys that just didn't quite fit at the time or maybe had been injured early. I mean, the play of it was good. It's all going to revolve around the quarterbacks, you know, clearly. And they've done something with the rule adjustments to make sure the quarterbacks don't at least continuous, you know, just get tsunami, you know.
Well, we saw the one guy though get hammered with his helmet rolling, but which was the play of the opening weekend, right? If you're picking one highlight, mm-hmm. And I think people love that. They go, "Oh, look, a quarterback got hammered," and there wasn't an emergency meeting of the protection of the quarterback foundation.
Paul, and that's another fair point. They're letting them be physical. Now, they're not going to let them be egregious, but they're letting them be physical, and, the people like that. But you can only bring five. There were some penalties called because, you know, coaches are going to do what they do, and they'll add another linebacker, and you can't do it. You know, but at least, because you know the defenses are going to be ahead of the offense, I thought the pace of play, the coaching decisions were good. You got NFL coaches, or you got guys that have been head coaches. There's only two guys that are doing it right now that have not been head coaches. It's Kevin Coyle that's taken over, you know, for Brad Childress down there in Atlanta, and then it's Tim Lewis there in Birmingham. Everybody else has been a head coach, so they know how to administer a game. The officiating was – I was impressed with it.
Dave McGinnis with us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. It is time to pull out the old iPhone there, Coach Mack, one of the three that you have in your pocket.
I hope this works.
We scroll through it as we find out who we're calling this week.
Hello. Coach Max.
Hello.
Contacts.
Hello.
Who does Coach Mac know?
Everybody is the answer to that question. Who we calling this week?
You know what? I spent the whole ball game. We were just talking about the Birmingham ball game.
Yeah.
With Chris Mortensen. He was there for the whole ball game. You know, and with full disclosure, his son Alex is the receiver coach at Birmingham. And to spend that whole day with Mort, he was down there early. It was outstanding. You know, and he said, you know, I understand you're doing some broadcasting now. I love you doing the games. I've listened to you. And I said, come on the show. He said, anytime.
And Coach Mack, you go back a ways with Chris, don't you?
Forever, it seems like. And again, it's always been a pleasure. When I first got into the league, again, and Mort was very, very good to me all throughout my career. And I mean, you won't find anybody as well known or as well respected in this league as Chris Mortensen. I spent that game that we just talked about last weekend, the Birmingham Memphis game, with Chris Mortensen, and it was a true pleasure. And then he agreed to come on today. Mort, how we doing?
You read that cue card I gave you exactly right.
Hey, last week he said exactly the same thing about Rick Gosselin. So it's very unclear who his favorite reporter is.
Mort, you like Rick, right?
Oh, Rick is like he's in my Hall of Fame.
Well, there you go, Paul. Thank you.
Rick is. I said this when he wrote his final column. I thought he was one of the most consequential writers of our time.
Absolutely.
And what's funny about it? He was in Kansas City when I got to know him, and he was covering a little bit of everything, including the Royals, Kansas City Royals, when George Brett was there making the run at 400. And the reason I bring that up is I actually covered, and we are now talking about when dinosaurs roamed the earth. I actually covered George Brett when George was a high school baseball and football player at El Segundo High, right there near Los Angeles.
Now that's outstanding,
right,
Mark.
The Raiders were.
I was telling these guys that we spent that game together last weekend. Give us kind of your thoughts. I've given them my brush, you know, my wide brush stroke on what I thought about the game and the setup and the way it was run. Give us yours.
On the Alliance game with the Birmingham Iron and the Memphis, I think
Express.
They're the Stallions, aren't they?
Express. No,
Salt Lake are the Stallions. The Express. Of course they're the Memphis Express.
Yeah.
Listen, I having some obviously personal interest with son coaching in the league, I was actually amazed. And this happened Saturday when the first two games were played and they were on TV. I was like kind of amazed that they pulled this off with basically 30 practices. And went out and played what I thought was very representative football. And I think there's a really neat curiosity factor for fans and with some of the rules and strategic tweaks that they're putting into play. But the quality of play I thought was better than expected. And I think that the league, and it was kind of funny to read some of the post, weekend reviews, which were mostly favorable, but some of them says, you know, I actually read some that said this is better than the NFL. Well, no, it's not better than the NFL. But I will say this, we've had guys who have played in the NFL who are out there playing, trying to get a second chance, and we have some guys that I think, just as people who coached in NFL Europe will tell you, when NFL Europe was a direct developmental league, really, for the league with allocated players from teams. I think it was Dave Gettleman, the general manager of the Giants, who said that there were three Super Bowl quarterbacks found in NFL Europe and 33 Pro Bowl players. And I thought that during the course of this past weekend and on that game on Sunday, I could see some of that happening. I was like pleasantly surprised and thrilled that it was that type of product.
Chris Mortensen, our guest here on the Midday 180. Chris, it's clear the league will attach itself, I think, to one of these leagues. How important is it that the AAF be that league for them?
Well, I mean, obviously. I mean, right, I would say right now they probably have an unofficial, well, how about this? They have an alliance with the NFL in terms of the interactions. I mean, just because you got a guy like Bill Polian, who's a Hall of Famer and a six-time Executive of the Year, who's the co-founder of the league, and really handling the football side. And then you got guys like Jeff Fisher and even Dave, it's kind of helping out in some of the strategic areas. I think that there's an opportunity here and the NFL Network has invested. When the NFL Network agrees to televise that many games, that means there's a partnership of sorts. And so, and the league is in dire need of a developmental league in this day and generation, where it's, and everybody wants to point to the 20-hour college rule for players who don't get as much development. I will point to the NFL labor rules, which prohibit these players from getting half as many reps as they used to get to develop themselves in the areas of offensive line and quarterback. There's other positions too that just need very strong development and opportunities. You only get that through playing, and I think that this is a great opportunity for the NFL to partner up. And I think that, you know, we'll see how it plays out down the road. But the alliance is first up right now, and I think that when you got this many good people, a lot of NFL coaches, former NFL coaches, really good coaches, working it, this is a good opportunity.
If you're not following Chris Mortensen on social media, you should, at Mort Report.
Hey, Mort, it's Paul Kuharsky.
Here's one of the greats, too.
Oh, come on. Settle down.
There you go, Paul. There's a Valentine for you right there.
Don't get Paul and I talking about Springsteen right now. Otherwise, the rest of the show would not be football.
Oh, these guys would go very quickly to commercial, Mort.
Yes, they would.
Sorry, Mort, we're out of time.
We've been talking about the safety market because Kenny Vaccaro obviously is a guy that did well here, but the Titans have an extension on the horizon for Kevin Byard. Eric Reed's deal seemed really out of whack for a guy that didn't play as well as Vaccaro and was a late addition. Collins, Honey Badger, Clinton Dix, Joyner, heading for free agency, maybe Weddle. What do you think the safety market's going to bring in free agency here, where safety hasn't done very well financially the last few years?
Yeah, I think that the Eric Reed contract did catch me off guard, Paul. And I really don't know where it's headed. That seemed to up the ante a little bit. Of course, the salary cap continues to expand every year. It's like last year when Reed went unsigned, and a lot of people tied it to the fact that he was among the people, players who took a knee with the anthem. And, my understanding from the people, there were teams that just earnestly felt Eric had priced himself out of the safety market, that is not a market that's going to be the spectacularly high contract jobs. So his contract this time around, I think, is in part due to Dave Tepper, the new Panthers owner, who is kind of a little more proactive or in the politically correct world would say progressive. And I thought that was reflected in the way they treated Eric Reed with the contract. I don't know where it's going, but all agents are going to do what, Paul?
Need that money or more.
Exactly. They need that money or more. That's the only insight I would offer.
Mort, what does the future plan look like at quarterback for Denver? Do you think Flacco is being traded to a team where they're about to add another rookie quarterback like Baltimore did last year?
Yeah, very possible. Now, I happen to be higher on the Flacco move than the general NFL population in terms of the fans, media, whatever. I think that the guy, we forget the year before he didn't even have a training camp because he had he was coming off a back surgery and didn't have a training camp, and they had more injuries than the offensive line. They didn't have receivers. Their running game was sparse. And so I thought this year he threw the ball. He was playing outstanding at the start of this year, threw the ball great, and then his hip, I think it was his hip, started acting up, and that's what gave Lamar Jackson's start. Now, what was interesting about that is Lamar's starts came against like the two worst defenses in the NFL, and even though Lamar didn't light it up, they ran the ball well because Lamar presents those different problems, which is like, you've got to defend it differently, and you haven't had a lot of time to practice against it. And that helped their defense. All of a sudden, their defense was getting 10 extra minutes of rest time. And that was a winning formula for Baltimore. And I don't think it was a reflection of Joe. I think in Denver, where they now have a new offensive coordinator, Rick Scangarella, who comes from Kyle Shanahan's tree, and Kyle, I think Kyle's play-action game is the best in the NFL. I think with Mike Munchak as line coach, and I think Munch is the best line coach in football, along with Dante Scarnecchia, who's with the Patriots, I think that's a much stronger move on the Broncos' behalf than it's being given credit for. At the same time, if a guy like Drew Locke of Missouri is sitting there at 10, or maybe they trade down, I'm not ruling it out, but it is a Broncos team that just hired Vic Fangio, 61-year-old Vic Fangio as head coach. Now they're 61's old, Dave.
Good job, Mort.
And a guy like Munch, and I think John's as competitive as John Elway is. They're not ever sitting there trying to rebuild. They have other needs other than just a young quarterback. So I think they may take a quarterback, but I can't tell you it's going to be with their first pick.
What then of Case Keenum?
Case Keenum now is on the market. Listen, he can be traded for a fifth-round pick or a sixth-round pick if they wanted to. But I think with Case Keenum, the way most people are looking at Case is, this is a guy who can be one of the top two or three number two quarterbacks in the league.
Titans need him.
And if you there's a great example. If you have a quarterback who's not showing that durability, he can come in and win games and, you know, also be a winner in the locker room the right way, where he's not going to divide a locker room, but he can play football. Case has earned his stripes, and I think that the Titans, actually, I didn't even think about that until you mentioned it, that'd be an ideal place.
Do you have a heart? Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
No, I think because he can start in this league and give you some quality starts.
Do you have a hard time believing Kyler Murray, or do you believe he's fully committed to being a quarterback in the NFL?
I think he's fully committed to being a quarterback in the NFL if he's taken in the top 15, which I think he will be. So, therefore, I think he's fully committed to the NFL. And I actually am a believer. I'm a believer that he's going to be a star. And I've never thought I would ever reach a point where I see a guy that small and say those things. But he's so dynamic, I think he's the funny thing about this Arizona Cardinals talk, I get it. They drafted Josh Rosen number one. I mean, not number one, with their first-round draft pick. And then when they hired Cliff Kingsbury, it was to keep in mind that, we got to develop this quarterback. But Kyler Murray fits exactly what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do in the NFL. And I know people who interviewed for that offensive coordinator job, and it fits exactly what Kyler Murray wants to do. But there's no indication from the Cardinals that they're putting Josh Rosen on the market. But it looks like they're going to have some fun with this up into the draft.
Mort, look, you're outstanding. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I mean, it's tremendous. And, look, I'm going to see you again at a Birmingham Iron game. I will see you there. Thanks,
well,
Mort.
I know watching games with Dave is like, hey, I get my own analyst right there with me.
We know. It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, everybody gets Tony Romo all this praise about what they're going to do. Dave's telling me the same thing.
Thanks, Mort. See you, brother. Right, thank you, man.
We appreciate it.
Follow Chris Mortensen on Twitter, @MortReport. Mac, you did it again. You proved
wonders
yet again.
Wonders never cease.
You know everyone.
If we were a different show, we'd say it's a Valentine's Day gift.
I'm keeping my Valentine's I brought for everybody but Morgan in my briefcase. She's going to get all four of them.
Join our active roster and be part of Team Hutton 104.5 and help the fight to end blood cancer. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Tennessee Man and Woman of the Year campaign is the nonprofit's largest annual fundraiser, and all funds raised provide life-saving blood cancer research. Just visit 1045thezone.com and make a tax-deductible donation. Plus, check out Hutton's event calendar, special giveaways, and more. The campaign runs through April 27th, so please donate now. Make someday today, because beating cancer is in our blood. More info at 1045thezone.com.